You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. Journey into the wondrous land of boundaries of data and imagination. That signpost up ahead, your next stop, Twilight Zone Commentaries.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone, the Commentaries. I'm your host, Robert. And while we're on our Christmas, New Year's break here, want to wish everybody, hope to have a Merry Christmas and a bright new year coming up. We're going to look at two Twilight Zone episodes for this commentary. The first one is a favorite of mine, starring Burgess Meredith, The Obsolete Man. And what a way to represent the end of the year. Then, starting up with a new year, the episode 2, which is the start of Season 3, which we're in right now, reviewing those episodes. But first, let's have an introduction by the man himself, Rod Serling.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Mr. Burgess Meredith is no stranger to the Twilight Zone, but his role in the story is a unique one even for him. The time will be the future, the place just about anywhere where men have been taken over by a machine state. Our story is called The Obsolete Man. It may chill, it may provoke, but we're rather certain it'll leave a mark. Twilight Zone, The Obsolete Man.
Thank you, Rod. Now, let's get ourselves set up here to watch The Obsolete Man. Make sure you have your DVD or VHS or whatever. Yeah, people still watch stuff on VHS. Go past, if you got the Time Life version of the Twilight Zone, go past the intro there and get to the point where the music's just getting ready to start, and then press pause right there. So, if everybody's set up, let's get started in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. Here we go with the opening here. Ah, yes. And here we get the opening. Talk about a big podium and a big table. I always love Rod's opening to these episodes. And as he's talking, he has to have a cigarette in his hand there. I love the drums to this. And the neat thing is you see the people out in the lobby, how they're hanging their heads down. Great opening to this. Well, while they go through the talk of the charges here, let me go ahead and give you a little information about the episode. Original air date was June the 2nd, 1961. Of course, the two main characters that I focus on is Burgess Meredith, who's Romney Wordsworth, and Fritz Weaver as the Chancellor. The production code was 173-3661. It was directed by Elliot Silverstein, written by Rod Serling. The music was uncredited stock, almost all of it from Bernard Herrmann's score for a radio adaptation of Brave New World. This is Season 2, Episode 65. Burgess Meredith, what a wonderful actor. It was great that they have in a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes here. After this, we don't see him again till Season 5. Devil Print. I think it's Printer Devil or Devil Prentice, one or the other there. Very much you can tell this is a totalitarian government run by a leader, and the people have to obey that leader. But a little bit of synopsis. In a future totalitarian state, Romney Wordsworth is a man put on trial for the crime of being obsolete. His occupation as a librarian is a crime punishable by death, as the state has eliminated literacy. He also believes in God, also punishable by death, as the state has declared that there is no God. He is persecuted by the Chancellor, of course played by Weaver, who announces in front of the assembled court that Wadsworth is not being an asset to the state and shall be liquidated. After being convicted, Wordsworth is allowed to choose his method of execution. He typically requests that he be granted a personal assassin to whom he may privately disclose his preferred method of execution. He also requests that his execution be televised. Both requests are granted by the court. A camera is installed in Wordsworth's study to broadcast his final hours and execution live to the nation. He summons the Chancellor, who shows up at exactly 11:16. After some discussion, Wordsworth reveals to the unsuspecting Chancellor that he has locked the door and that his chosen method of execution is by an explosion hidden in the room that is set to go off at midnight. He intends to show the nation how a spiritual man faces death, and he proceeds to read Psalms 23 and the beginning of Psalms 53, among others, from his illegal copy of the Bible. Here comes the verdict now. I love the tension that Burgess Meredith shows as he backs away. Now back into the light to get your sentence. And you see the wheels click in his mind. Huh. sneaky, isn't he, about sneaking that camera in? What is so great is this is so simple of a set that they set this up. They call it Assassinated Liquidator. I love how they do that. Make it sound so futuristic. Oh, as we leave this scene. Well, the episode I was trying to think of was called Printer's Devil. That's last time you see Burgess Meredith. Other ones that he did was, of course, the very popular Time Enough at Last from season one. Also, Mr. Dingle the Strong. He also did a narration for the Twilight Zone movie in 1983. He did not receive on-screen credit for his narration. Just to show that he could do the job for scale rather than charge his usual minimum fee. As compensation for Meredith's uncredited work, his name was inserted into the dialogue in a scene between Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks at the beginning of the movie. Also, he was in some episodes in another series that Rod did at the Twilight Zone called Night Gallery. Burgess Meredith is well known as the Penguin, the villain in the Batman TV series. He was pretty good in that. He was also in a series called Probe, which ran 1972-73. Burgess played a VCR Cameron, director of Probe Control, and the television movie pilot. And then they changed the name from Probe to Search. They said the name was changed to avoid conflict with a program on PBS by the same name. I love this confrontation between Weaver's character and Burgess' character. Besides doing television, he also did film and stage as well. He was a very busy actor. Another popular film was Rocky, where he played the owner of a boxing ring and was Rocky's coach. His character died in the third Rocky film. He returned briefly in the fifth Rocky V. Of course, he was in movies called Clash of the Titans. Just remember that one. Santa Claus the Movie, Grumpy Old Men. The weird movie called Magic with a very young Anthony Hopkins. various career. In theater, he played in Romeo and Juliet in 1930s. Now, I love this scene here because this is very much a Hitchcockian feel to this, the way this is set up in here with the room. And they're having a little conversation, they're talking with each other there before he springs a surprise on the Chancellor about the door being locked. Weaver kind of does like an evil type Chancellor. Let's go ahead and listen to this a little bit. For governed the career of Fritz Weaver. Very much a connection feel to the first episode that Burgess Meredith did in Twilight Zone. The Time Enough at Last. See, very much a Hitchcock scene right here. See, the Chancellor suspects something. Look in his face. He's very uneasy. Mr. Wordsworth experiment. Showed the true face of the state. Uh-oh. Just like a cage animal. Very much the David against the Goliath, the one person against the state. Before we go over to Fritz Weaver, Burgess Meredith was born November 16, 1907. He died September 9, 1997. The thing that kind of disappointed me with this is I wish he would have read from more than the Bible. I know that's the whole point, but it would have been nice if he could have read, you know, some lines for some other banned books, which I thought would have been pretty neat, but not bad. Of course, Fritz Reaver had just as big of a a life and career as well as Burgess Meredith did. The other episode that he appeared in was Third from the Sun, besides the obsolete man that we're watching right now. Of course, Weaver's was mostly a TV actor, which will be brought up in 2, where we have a diversion between Elizabeth Montgomery and Charles Bronson. But he did do some movies as well, but not as long of a credits as Burgess Meredith. But, you know, the other things that Weaver was in, he was in Beyond This Place, Dr. Kildare, The Fugitive, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Rawhide, Mission Impossible, Combat, Gunsmoke, Maddox. He also appeared again in Night Gallery, as Burgess did. Kung Fu, Hawaii Five-O, Magnum P.I., Murder, She Wrote, Madlock, Law and Order, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, in the episode Tribunal, The X-Files, so a lot of television appearance. He played the father that was killed in The Legend of Lizzie Borden with Elizabeth Montgomery. Also, he did acting on the stage, the Chalk Garden, Baker Street, Love Letters, The Crucible, and his movie appearances was Creepshow, Marathon Man, The Thomas Crown Affair, Demon Seed, Day of the Dolphin, Failsafe. Uh-oh, he's cracking up now. Uh-oh, he said the magic words. And as far as I know, Fritz Reaver's still alive. He was born 1926. They have his age as 85. Oop. Here goes the bomb. Uh-oh, now he's going to have the chance to face the music for what he done. He thinks it's a natural day of work. Now, you notice that people are not out there in the hallway there. Uh-oh. Now he gets his medicine for being a chicken. Yeah, you're obsolete if you're a chicken. Uh-oh. This is where he gets ready to get mobbed by the people. You know, for about 22, 23 minutes, you know, this is an excellent episode. Look at the looks on the people's faces there. Just the madness in their face that they're going to get ready to attack him. And look at their hands. Their voice is going up. Goodbye, Chancellor. Been nice knowing you. Rod's ending narration. Like the line that he says at the end here. Yep. As I said, the drums were excellent in this at the beginning and at the end. The Twilight Zone, created by Rod Serling. And so ends season two. And what a great way to end the season. We're going through the credits here. Yeah, filmed by MGM. And the old CBS thing at the end here. And then the old Steve's Eye. Well, that was pretty good. That was The Obsolete Man. One of the episodes of Twilight Zone I enjoy a lot. And then coming up next will be the episode 2.
And now, Mr. Serling.
This is a jungle. A monument built by nature honoring disuse, commemorating a few years of nature being left to its own devices. But it's another kind of jungle. The kind that comes in the aftermath of man's battles against himself. Hardly an important battle, not a Gettysburg or a Marne or an Iwo Jima. More like one insignificant corner patch in the crazy quilt of combat. But it was enough to end the existence of this little city. It's been 5 years since a human being walked these streets. This is the first day of the sixth year, as man used to measure time. The time, perhaps 100 years from now, or sooner. Or perhaps it's already happened 2 million years ago. The place, the signposts are in English, so that we may read them more easily. But the place is the Twilight Zone.
Nothing like starting the year off with a nuclear holocaust, it said. So, let's go ahead and I'll give the information for 2 during the watching of the episode. Again, make sure you have your DVD or VHS set up. If you got the Time Life version, make sure you go past that little opening thing they got there and get to the point before the music starts and hit pause. So, we're going to get ready to go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. There's the music. Sorry, I forgot to start the opening with Rod's introduction to 2. I'll go more into the information after Rod's narration here. Love how they got this set up. See, if you look right there, there was some movement there in the truck. Enter Elizabeth Montgomery. They're characters simply known as man and woman. Which is very appropriate, because why have a name after a holocaust? As Rod said, this is set 5 years later, after the war. dressed in a nice suit. Alright, now we begin. Episode 2, starring Charles Bronson, Elizabeth Montgomery, airs September 15, 1961. It was the first episode of Season 3, Episode 66. It was directed by Montgomery Pittman and written also by Montgomery Pittman. Featured music by Nathan Van Cleve. Production code was 4802. I love how they got the scene set up. It's very empty, especially with just them two. You know, Elizabeth gets a little bit of screen time before she finds a restaurant and go gets her canned chicken. Well, she sees that dress that she likes. You would think the uniform would be more raggedy than it is. It seems to be for, you know, if that's the same uniform she's wore for 5 years, you think it'd be more tore up and wore down. Now, you know what I wonder? The thing is with the canned chicken that she finds. I wonder what the date is of it to expire. Looks like they used a paint can. Could that be KFC chicken? Yummy. Uh-oh. There's Charles Bronson. Ooh! Yep, throwing things at the guy. While they have their confrontation, a little information on Elizabeth Montgomery. It's kind of interesting how they both went different ways. Elizabeth Montgomery stayed more with television. Charles Bronson went more into the movies. But, yeah, before we talk about Elizabeth Montgomery's career here, a little bit of synopsis. As you heard Rod, the voiceover suggests the time could be hundreds of years in the future, millions of years in the past. Who knows? A female survivor of an apocalyptic war, her face dirty and wearing a tattered army uniform, stumbles into a deserted, war-ravaged town. She looks into some of the shop windows, passing to examine a white dress, then finds a restaurant, goes inside in search of food. She finds a can of chicken, but before she can open it, a man also wearing a military uniform, which is Bronson right now, walks in and eyes the food from the doorway. Recognizing his uniform as that of the enemy, she turns and attacks, initially throwing the pots and pans, which just happened. After all attempts at defending himself fail, the man knocks her out, and man, that had to hurt. Begins to ravenously eat the chicken while the woman lies unconscious on the floor. The man notices a single animal that survived the war, a dove, which flew away, which is coming up. He examines a calendar with a woman in a swimsuit on the wall, turns to look back at his opponent, realizes that he desires human companionship more than he wants to continue a now pointless conflict. And then the synopsis goes on to pretty much what we're seeing right now with the story. I love how a less and more situation where there is not that much talking, it's more action, and Elizabeth Montgomery, more facial reaction. Because she only says one line, or one word actually, in this episode. I like how he wanders around, and there's your dub. See, he's too busy in the chicken to notice about the dub line. Well, anyway, Elizabeth Montgomery. She was born April 15, 1933. She died May 18, 1995. Her career spanned 5 decades. She's best remembered for her role as Samantha Stevens in Bewitched, in A Case of Rape, and as Lizzie Borden in The Legend of Lizzie Borden. Her earlier television dramas included Studio One, Craft Television Theater, of course the episode here of The Twilight Zone, The 11th Hour, Boris Karloff's Thriller, and Alfred Hitchcock Presents. 1954, she lost out on co-starring with Marlon Brando in the film On the Waterfront. Now that's a little interesting back there, people. 1960, Montgomery was nominated for an Emmy for her portrayal of Southern prostitute Rusty Heller in an episode of The Untouchables, playing opposite David White, who later portrayed Darren's boss, Larry Tate, in Bewitched. She was featured in a role as a socialite with Harry Saville and Sammy Davis Jr. in the offbeat 1963 gangster film Johnny Cool, and the same year with Dean Martin and Carol Burnett in the motion picture comedy Who's Been Sleeping in My Bed. Nevertheless, Alfred Hitchcock had her in mind to play the sister-in-law of Sean Connery, who sees herself as a rival to the troubled heroine in the movie Marine. But Montgomery was unable, owning to her commitment to a new television show, Bewitched. So see, it's interesting how she was offered a movie role and then Bewitched came up and she decided to play Bewitched, which was a good pick for her. Listen to a little bit of the dialogue here. I like Charles' little speech here. It's almost like he's talking to himself because she doesn't understand his language. Now, it's hard for me to believe that they're the only two left. I kind of doubt that. There had to be some other people around. Well, back to Elizabeth Montgomery's career here. After Bewitched, besides the other TV movies I mentioned, she was in the miniseries The Awakening Land in 1978. Kind of a funny little note here. In 77, Montgomery played a police detective having an interracial affair with her partner, played by O.J. Simpson, in A Killing Affair. She made a chilling villain in 1985 picture Amos, playing a nurse in a state home who terrorized residents, portrayed by Kirk Douglas and Dorothy McGuire. One of her last roles was in the episode for Batman the Animated Series, entitled Showdown, in which she played a barmaid. This was also her final work to be screened, as the episode aired posthumously. Her last television movies were the highly rated Edna Buchanan Detective Series. The second and final film of the series received its first airing May 9, 1995, only days before she died. Of course, people remember she was married a lot. She married Gig Young, 56 to 63, William Asher, 63 to 73. They had three children. And then she, towards the end of her life, lived with Robert Foxworth. After they lived together for nearly 20 years, she married to Foxworth until her death. And you remember Robert Foxworth played in Falcon Crest as Chase Giardi. And I was very sad when she passed away, because she was one of my favorite actresses. I kind of had a crush on her when I was a kid. Watch a little bit of this and we'll go into Charles Bronson's career. Having to take a shave. Kind of almost like Planet of the Apes, where going towards the end of the movie, Charlton Heston shaved off his beard. Yes, Lynn, I mentioned Charlton Heston just for you. Throws a towel at her. Wipe your face. There was a little talk when we reviewed this about where the water came from for them that cleaned themselves up. I'm kind of contending that it's probably rainwater. Because you gotta see how many holes this building has. There she is, she kinda stands at attention. Now I love how they did the scenes here with all the rocks and how everything's all messed up. Like I said in my review, they must have brought in a couple dump trucks and stuff here. Now when they get to the theater, which is coming up here, I thought there was a skeleton here. Yep, money ain't worth nothing now. Yep, there's a skeleton there. Not really, a whole body. It looks more like a head. There's a skeleton right there. Bobby mentioned that he didn't see no human remains here, so they did put a couple of human remains there. Because there's a soldier right there in the corner where she has the gun. Yeah, but I agree. You think there'd be more bodies around. Now he sees the dress, he's going to get it for her. old Charles Bronson, known as Charles Dennis Brzezinski. He was born 1921. He died, November 3rd, 1921. He died August 30th, 2003. Now, his career was mostly in movies. He was best known for Once Upon a Time in the West, The Magnificent Seven, The Dirty Dozen, The Great Escape, Rider on the Rain, The Mechanic, and also the very popular Death Wish series, kind of like, you know, Eastwood in the Dirty Harry series. His series was Death Wish, where he plays an architect. His wife is killed, his daughter's almost killed, and then he turns into a vigilante. And then, you know, going more into the Death Wish series, he kind of turns more vigilante-like. They said he's often cast in the role of police officer or gunfighter, often in revenge-oriented plot lines. Yep. Oh, here's the scene. She's getting ready to change, and she kind of stepped into the wrong place to change. A recruiting office. Uh-oh. What might not be known to a lot of people, in 1943, Bronson enlisted in the United States Army Air Forces, served as an aerial gunner in the 760th Flexible Gunnery Training Squadron, and in 1945 as a B-29 Super Fortress crewman with the 39th Bombardment Group based on Guam. He was awarded a Purple Heart for wounds received during his service. Oop, laser guns. '52, he appeared in an episode of Red Skelton Show. Also during the House Un-American Activities Committee, you know, the old witch hunt back in 1954, he changed his surname from Brzezinski to Bronson at the suggestion of his agent. He had a lead role in the episode of Apache Kid of the syndicated crime drama Sheriff of Cohish. He played in Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel. Kind of a lonely night there by herself. Gives her time to think about what she did. Yeah, he was also in the movie Great Escape, The Legend of Jesse James. He was also in the Fugitive episode, The One That Got Away. course, he did a lot of films for the Canon film era, from 81 to 94. Of course, Bronson married Jer Ireland. He met her in 1962 when she was married to Scottish actor David McComb. And they were married until she died of breast cancer at the age 54 in 1990. Said Jill usually played as leading lady, and they starred in 14 movies together. Wow. We'll go ahead and watch the ending of this here. Love it with the dress and the combat boots. And we hear Rod's final narration. Here again, she's trailing him. Oh, get a little smile from her. Throughout that love story. This, of course, was one of my favorite. I give this a classic rating of 5. I kind of set this book in with Time Enough at Last. And of course, the old CBS ending thing here. And that is it for 2. What a way to start the season 3 off with that episode. And so I hope everybody enjoyed the Obsolete Man and 2. I know there was a lot of information during the commentary, but I hope it was useful to you. Hope you did enjoy it. As we leave, I want to wish everybody a happy new year. A new year coming up. Hopefully it'll be better than last. Of course, we all kind of say that we wish it was better than the last. Just have to wait and see how it plays out. So as we head out, I'm going to play you a Twilight Zone remix done by the group Zed's Dead. Now, of course, where do you think they got that name, Zed's Dead? Remember Pulp Fiction and the very end where Bruce Willis's character says on the motorcycle to his wife, Zed's Dead. Everybody, take care. Have a happy new year. And we'll see you next time where we will be back to our regular format of reviewing. Take care, everybody, and talk to you again. Goodbye, everybody.
The mention of sound. Another dimension.